Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is once again in session. I'm connected with Steve via Zoom because you are in the Sunshine State.
I'm in the sunshine in a very southern isolated region. We don't need to go into specifics where, but
right.
a little vacation that was about due after a long year to this point. So just enjoying a little bit of time away and decompressing, and then we'll get back to it here at the end of the week.
Sounds good. Before we get started, I want to do a quick shout out to My Whiskey Den. My Whiskey Den had me on their show on Monday. Had a lot of fun. Drank maybe a little too much whiskey, but Ben, Mike, and Pat set me up with a bunch of craft whiskeys and let me taste them and describe them. And I think they were whiskeys that they had talked about on their show before. So I got to be kind of the differing view, but I didn't know what I was drinking until I drank it, and it was a lot of fun. So check out My Whiskey Den, and you'll see my big smiling face on there. And thanks again, guys.
Shout out to those guys too. Ben, he slid a few in your whiskey package. He slid a few cigars in for me that were all very good. They have, I believe, all been smoked, maybe all except for maybe one. So yes, very, very appreciative of that on my end.
So thanks, Ben. Thanks, My Whiskey Den. And if you're listening to this and you feel like checking out that episode, please do. It's on YouTube. All right, man. How are things going in Florida?
They're good. It's interesting. I got down here and I went to the gym. And I found a gym down here and I went to go check it out, and there was a guy who, so they're not requiring masks. They're not mandating you wear a mask. When you go, like, so in Ohio, when you enter and exit the gym, you need to have a mask on, but you don't need to wear one while you're working out. Well, in Florida, they have not, at least where I'm at specifically, there's no mandate to wear a mask going in and out of the gym, and there's no mandate to wear a mask in a gym. They just ask that you socially distance, and then they ask that you hit your hands with hand sanitizer when you come in and when you go out. So I get there, I get all signed in for my guest passes or whatever. I'm gathering my stuff together, and another guy comes in and he makes a big deal about wearing masks, says he's not wearing a mask. And the guy behind the desk is like, I'm not asking you, we're not requiring you to wear a mask. And this guy that comes in out of nowhere is like yelling at the guy behind the desk, like, I'm not wearing a mask. And the guy's like, you don't have to. We're not asking you to. It's not required that you do it. Like, you just come in, get signed up, and go work out. Like, you don't have to wear a mask.
And the guy kinda, you don't understand. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, that's exactly, like, I mean, it was bizarre. And it felt like, is this guy trying to, like, get recorded so that he can – yell at people about not wearing a mask. I don't know. It was just bizarre. And then he proceeded to have the worst, 50-year-old guy workout that you could imagine. Lots of half-ass curls and
no range of motion.
Calf raises and hitting the abs that he hasn't seen in 30 years. So it all fit, but I just thought that was kind of like a bizarre instance. But other than that, it's been pretty good, pretty chilled. Nothing really to write home about. So,
cool.
Florida's good.
Yeah. The I'm gonna pick a fight about masks guy is just way too easy to find.
Now, mind you, I should say, like, where I am in Florida is a pretty isolated place. It's a tourist spot, and it's the off season, so there's literally no one here. I was on the beach the other day, my throwing shoulder isn't what it used to be, but you know, for me to hit the next group of people would have taken a pretty strong throw of a rock. So
you need to Pat Mahomes to hit the next person.
Yeah, I mean, not quite Patty Mahomes, but you know, maybe Trent Dilfer towards the end. But there's just not a lot of people here. So I mean, people say, "Oh my God, you're going to Florida." I'm like, "Yeah, but where I'm at in Florida, there's literally the condo that I'm staying in. This entire tower, there's probably, you know, 200 plus units, and less than a quarter of them have someone in it. You know, the floor I'm on, there's no one else staying on this floor. You know, it's just me. So I'm not overly, I don't have a lot of COVID concerns here.
Okay, good. Good. And I'm sure you're glad you're in Florida and not in Portland, Oregon, because Portland is apparently going fucking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's worth, like, I mean, so it, we need to talk about it. You know, there's a section of Portland where Black Lives Matter and Antifa have taken over in terms of this, you know, nonstop protest, social disturbance, riot. I don't know what you want to call it. You know, the videos, it's very Lord of the Flies, you know, kind of post-apocalypse looking scene. And it's not really being reported on. It's not like the media is not talking about it. It's not really being covered. And I think it needs to be, because, you know, there's so many people out there saying that all cops are bad. We need to completely defund the police and abolish the police because, you know, they're it's an inherently racist and oppressive system to have police. And I think that it's one of those situations where it swung too far to the left. And, you know, I've consistently said that Antifa was problematic going back to when they were punching people in the face and starting disturbances on UCLA's campus because Ann Coulter was speaking there. Or Ben Shapiro was speaking there. And I mean, you know, people pushed back and said, oh, well, these are, you know, agitators that are sneaking in under the banner of Antifa. And at this point, it doesn't matter. It's whoever it is, whether it's some GOP, KKK members coming in from Alabama into Portland and starting fires and ripping people out of their cars and beating them up and saying Antifa and Black Lives Matter, at this point, it no longer matters. They're wearing the banner of Antifa, and if this isn't Antifa, they haven't been fighting back enough to say that it isn't them. Black Lives Matter is, I think, as an organization, is kind of devolving, and this is, like, this something needs to be done. All right, the police pulling out is problematic and people don't want police. All right, well, this is what you get, right? Because at some point in time, you're going to have to enforce some sort of rule of law, whether it's the rule of law that we have codified from the Constitution down to local ordinances and laws, or it's the rule of law as written, as decided by these particular groups, right? And these groups are deciding that, you know, just random white people who are, you know, encroaching on their space need to be, you know, pulled out of their cars and beaten and pushed because they disagree with them politically. And that's extremely problematic. And they need to, and this, what they're doing isn't solving anything. And I think at some point in time, the Portland police are going to have to come back into the situation and neutralize them and use these aggressive tactics that we said we didn't want, but they're going to be required because these groups are giving them no other choice. And then you're not going to gain anything by having these situations. I don't think that the Portland, at that point in time, Portland officials are going to want to come to the table and negotiate with these people or sit down and hear what their ideas are. They're just going to say, all right, well, now that that's over, we're going to go ahead and do what we said we were going to do. And by the way, you guys can't be trusted because, you know, we gave you an inch and you literally tried to burn the city down.
Yeah. I now that we're talking about it, I wish I had reached out to Jess in Portland because she used to be a regular listener to the show. Maybe still is. She got wifed up and we haven't communicated as much as we used to, but I should reach out to her and see if it's as crazy as it sounds. I honestly have not seen any videos. I, you know, my stance on Antifa is that it's a made up boogeyman for the right, and I stand by that. But
yeah, but I mean, at this point, like, you can't, like, there's nothing to support. Right. There's nothing to support your, like, that was your feeling a long time ago, but now there's plenty of evidence that this isn't a made up boogeyman, right? Like, they're a problem. They're right in our face right now. And they've grown and metastasized to the point where they're legitimately harming people. So this stance that it's a made-up boogeyman from the GOP and that it's a couple bad actors that are looking to disrupt the narrative to swing in favor of the right, like, you've got enough evidence right in front of you to say that's not the case, right? Like, you can see, like, we see who these people are. We see their faces. You know, they're walking around the streets screaming Antifa, screaming Black Lives Matter, but at the same time ripping people out of cars, kicking them in the face, pushing them down the street, hitting them with baseball bats, and literally being bullies and thugs. And they've been a problem for a while. And because we've continued to go down this road of, oh, it's these other people that are pretending to be, no, we've known all along what Antifa was. They grew out of the Occupy movement. And yeah, there are some bad actors who flocked to it because they saw an opportunity, but this is what the organization is. And at some point in time, we have to stop sweeping them under a rug as just a group, a small number of punks that are causing spot problems and deal with them like as they present themselves. Like, in Portland, they presented themselves as a major problem.
Again, I have not seen any of the videos. I've seen the headlines. I agree with what you're saying in terms of action, in terms of organization. I don't know that there is enough of a central organization. You said that they're not denouncing or, you know, not denying. I don't think there's anyone to denounce or deny. I don't think there is a you know, Cobra Commander of Antifa.
Okay, agreed. But then that also goes to your point that, well, to say it's just a boogeyman and this made up problem, that goes more to my point, right? Like, there's not a central command. There's not an ideology of the group that you can go to them and they're small different factions, different splinters, and they all have their beliefs and core system. But something that we've seen consistent is that where they show up and there's protest and there's discord, they are directly involved in the worst problematic situations when we have these various protests and disruptions and things like that. I mean, you can go to every city where there's been an issue and there's someone sporting Antifa related, you know, paraphernalia or whatever, they're in the background riling things up.
Okay. I mean, the videos don't lie. I would love to see, you know, have boots on the ground in Portland right now just to see it myself, though on the flip side I'd rather not be involved in a mess like that. But I'm curious as to what the end game is for the protesters, because if this is still police reform and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and that, if that's what's stirring this protest, Portland's a weird place for that to be the epicenter of that. I mean, I can understand if people in Louisville or Minneapolis were still, protesting, but Portland is by all accounts one of the whitest cities in America.
Portland, yes, it is one of the whitest cities in America, but they still have people of color in the demographic, and they still have issues with police. Like the issues around police reform apply across the board. And so, like, Portland has had issues with their police departments and, issues of, you know, abuse of power and excessive use of force and things like that. So that's not saying that because it's predominantly white, they don't have these issues. They may not present themselves like they do in, let's say, a Cleveland or Baltimore or, you know, Chicago or, you know, even Minneapolis is getting drawn into this, but they still have their issues there. So I don't think that's the right way to frame it. You know, but I think that what is happening in Portland is that whatever their end game was, whatever they were initially protesting, I think has been lost in the chaos that has since ensued. And so there has to be a balance between trying to achieve police reform, trying to achieve social justice, and trying to help those who have been hurt the most by a system that's not designed for them, right? Or that's been designed to hurt them. There's a balance between, you know, pushing for that change, disrupting the system, getting the attention of those in power, and shifting them into a position of where they're willing to relinquish some of that power and to help to kind of swing things in the favor of the people who need it versus what's happening, right? Because all this is going to do is deepen the line in the sand, and those that are going to want to bring the hammer with, you know, a lot of force to kind of quell this are going to feel justified in their reasoning to do so. And then those who are doing this, you know, it's going to be hard to support them, right? Like, how can you get behind this when you watch some of the stuff that's going on there? Like, it's like you can't look at it and say, oh yeah, I totally get what these people are doing. I see what they're fighting for. I'm behind that. Like, you can't. Like, and what's happened is that this is, it's just gotten out of control, and it's because there's no balance, right? Like, I mean, and part of it is on Portland officials for, you know, not dealing with this earlier before it got to this point. But at the same time, these groups have pushed it to this point, right? Like, I mean, like you wanted the police out. Okay. Now they're out and now you're in charge, but what you're doing is creating a hellscape. And so at some point, someone's going to have to take control of that situation. And when they do, you know, these Antifa groups and these Black Lives Matter groups aren't going to like it. They're going to be even more pissed, and people are going to want to protest more. But in reality, how can you, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. It seems like a vicious circle.
The problem, I guess, really is that there doesn't seem to be an organization or a goal or a platform. It seems to be just chaos. And you're right to just turn, I mean, if the people of Portland had said, okay, we want the police disbanded and we're going to run the city ourselves, and then they start acting like fucking, you know, terrorists is not maybe the right word, but certainly, you know, agitators or doing property damage and hurting people, no one, including myself, is going to support them. And so if I see, you know, police and riot gear in Portland start being aggressive and fighting back against people who've shown that they're willing to act with violence, I'm going to support the police.
I mean, so the other question is why? So I guess the other question is why haven't you seen it to this point? Right. And so is it you just not thinking it's that big of a deal? You don't care? Or is it intentional on the media's, from the media standpoint, to not show what's actually going on? You know, I mean, is the media saying, well, if we show what's going on in Portland, this disrupts the narrative of, you know, Black Lives Matter and Antifa being all about social change, and we don't want to hurt that image, we don't want to disrupt that narrative, so we're going to ignore what's going on in Portland and move on to what's going on in the something else in the news cycle. Or have they just gotten bored with the whole idea of social justice and just moved on? Or is it a combination? Because I think that's something at least worth thinking about.
Yeah, I haven't watched Fox News or OAN in the last several days, and I'm guessing they're covering this pretty intensely. I don't know, but I can't believe that Antifa and Black Lives Matter and chaos in a very liberal city would not be front and center for their shows. That's on me. I've not, honestly, the last 4 days I've been wrapped up in personal stuff and work stuff. And
yeah, no, I get it. And so, I mean, it's not true. I'm sure it is on Fox and OAN. I'm under no circumstances am I watching OAN. That's just,
you're on vacation.
No, I mean, just any, like, vacation or not, I'm just not watching OAN because it's just awful. But, you know, it's not like we're not seeing it really on CNN. We're not really seeing it on MSNBC. We're not seeing it anywhere else. And it shouldn't just be on Fox to report about this, right? I mean, it works out for Fox because that's the narrative that they want to push. They love this because you've got a liberal city that's basically burning because the progressives are mad at the, you know, liberal, you know, city officials that have, you know, turned Portland into whatever they believe that it should or shouldn't be. You know, you have another case of the progressive left eating its own, which has kind of been a theme over the last, I don't know, 8-10 years, right? And now it's happening to the actual cities where they live. So it is an interesting dynamic to see. But again, the question goes back to why aren't your news outlets, you know, really talking about this? And part of it, I've seen some really disturbing videos of people that were seriously hurt. You know, a guy now, you know, you had a guy who was driving through. Now you don't know if he was maliciously driving through a group of protesters or not, but he crashes and then he gets dragged out of his car and literally he gets his ass beat all the way down the street until he's knocked unconscious.
I saw that video.
And, you know, there was another video of a guy who, like, I haven't seen a video of anything before, but, I mean, you see a guy walking away from a group of Antifa Black Lives Matter protesters, and they're literally screaming at this guy, Antifa Black Lives Matter, and then, you know, one of the people, you know, trips the guy, and then they all just flock on top of him and beat the shit out of him. And again, I don't know what that's accomplishing. All that looks like to me is just gang violence. And it's just, I've had issues with Antifa from the beginning, you know, since they really started to make their presence known on college campuses, because their behavior, there was nothing about their behavior that said social justice. You know, they said they were anti-fascist, but everything about their behavior was fascist, in the idea of you had someone speaking on a college campus saying something that you didn't like. So your answer was go physically abuse anyone who tried to hear that and attack them, right? Like that in and of itself isn't anti-fascist. That in and of itself is the beginning of fascism, right? Like, so I've never bought into Antifa. I don't care if you think it's a boogeyman, whoever. All I know is that they've been the same ever since, and people's characterizations of them have changed, but they've been the same assholes from the get-go.
Yeah, I'm not denying that the people doing these things are assholes, and I am 100% against any time that people are afraid to hear speech, even if it's – I mean, I've been very clear that I think Ben Shapiro is an annoying, smug douchebag, but if – he's coming to your campus to talk and you think you can challenge him on ideas, do it. Go there. To his credit, he often takes questions at the end of his speeches, and, you know, dialogue is how people learn and how things get resolved, not throwing a tantrum because someone's on your campus saying things you don't want to hear. And I've heard a lot of people talking about how this is, all about the, you know, current generation of college age kids and just out of college age kids who literally have never been pushed and never been challenged. And now anything that disrupts their safe zone causes them to flip out. And I don't know how true that narrative is, but it certainly, none of this disrupts that theory or breaks that theory. And, you know,
no, I guess I would say, because there's plenty of people my age that are very, very progressive left wing that you can't challenge them on any of this. Like, there's a woman I used to work with, and she posted something on social media, basically a meme of a guy who had bought like a bunch of fruit and a Sprite and some like peanuts out of a vending machine and said, all this fruit cost me $32. $32, do you know how much fast food I could have bought for $32, right? And so the whole point was that you can't eat healthy on a budget and that healthy food isn't affordable. Now, as a person who eats a lot and eats probably an 80% healthy diet, I can agree that it can be costly over time, especially when you're looking for variety and flavor and things like that. But the reality of it is that I've also been broke and eaten healthy on a budget. Like, you can do it. It may not taste the best, but you can absolutely eat, you know, you can get some, you know, spring mix and, you know, some Purdue chicken breast in a bag, you know, from Walmart, and, you know, cans of tuna and, you know, mustard and a vinaigrette and, you know, that'll feed, you know, a couple people for a week. So you can do it. It's just that it's not going to have the variety of, you know, mangoes and cantaloupe and avocado toast. And she pushed back on me and was just like, no, you can't do it. It's impossible. And I'm like, no, literally, I just laid it out for you with prices, you know, from a store. She's like, well, you can't do it in California that way because California is really expensive. Well, I'm like, well, that's a different conversation, right? I mean, like, because now
you can't afford rent in California.
Right, exactly. I mean, like, the cost of living in California is 40% higher than where I'm at right now. But the conversation is still relatively the same, right? Like, I mean, compared to fast food, because the fast food is more expensive in California, right? Okay. Like, so, you know, like, the conversation is still the same. You can do it on a budget, but her whole point was that it was impossible and that food needs to be cheaper and the government needs to make food cheaper, and capitalist system is oppressive and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Like, that's her whole thing, and she's 41 years old. And she, you can't pull her out of that box. And so some of the progressive left ideology that is just so deep rooted that they're beyond having a conversation with, you know, and they want, and if you disagree with them or challenge them, they will fight you on it and not with facts or not with substance to support their stance. They will just fight you and say, you don't get it, or you're a capitalist, or you're a racist, or you're a oppressive part of the patriarchy and that whole thing. And so it can be a tough uphill climb to try to bring some levity to the entire conversation.
Well, and I'm going to push back and say
levity was the wrong word.
Yeah, it was,
but you know what I'm saying?
Reason would be a
yes,
better word.
Yes.
I'm going to push back and say logic seems to have abandoned a lot of the general public. I mean, we started the show talking about the dude who was going to demand to, you know, be free and not wear a mask when he wasn't even being told to wear a mask. I had a friend of mine, very conservative guy, who asked me, why aren't people protesting the death of Kenan Hinnant? If you don't know who Kenan Hinnant is, he's a 5-year-old boy who was murdered in Wilson, North Carolina. A man has been arrested for the murder. Literally says the guy just literally came up and shot him in the head as a 5-year-old boy. And the man who shot him is black. And I've got my friend saying to me, why aren't people protesting that? Where's the media coverage of that? And I get it that it's a horrific thing. And I certainly am in no way minimizing or diminishing that, but there's nothing to protest. The guy who did it is a civilian, not a government organization. And he's been arrested. He's charged with capital murder. What more
right.
is there?
I mean, and we know the outcome. It's not. I mean, he is going at minimum going to jail for the rest of his life, if not facing the death penalty. You know, and I don't know the stat. I don't know if they have the death penalty in North Carolina or not. I would imagine they probably do.
I would bet on it.
So I'm assuming this guy is going to go to jail for the rest of his life and probably meet a pretty shitty death at the end. So I'm not, again, like you said, there's really nothing to protest. Much of the protest that comes with, you know, police excessive use of force is that there is no justice, right? And ultimately, because I mean, people, and we say justice, yeah, but people really want vengeance, right? Like, that's what people want. They want revenge. They want an eye for an eye. They want Old Testament, you fuck me, I fuck you. That's what they want, right? Like, so, and it doesn't matter whether it's Black Lives, like, the people in these situations, right? When it's Black Lives Matter and people are screaming for the arrest and prosecution of the men who killed Breonna Taylor, they want revenge. They want their justice is revenge. They want these men to suffer. They want them to lose their jobs. They want them to be charged. They want them to go to jail, and they want them to spend the rest of their lives in jail, because that balances out in their minds the death of this girl who was innocent. Right. Yep. I mean, like, and that's what they want. With George Floyd, this guy killed, you know, the one officer, you know, held his knee on George Floyd's neck. The other officers didn't do anything. You know, they put him in that position. They want these officers to suffer, you know, as revenge for what happened. It, like, you can call it justice, you call it whatever you want, but they want vengeance. And, you know, in this situation, the guy who killed this kid, he's been charged, he's been arrested. Statistically, we know without a doubt that 99.9% he is going to jail for the rest of his life and probably going to die either in jail or at the hands of the state. So there is absolutely nothing to protest. You know, I mean, the one thing you would protest is that you have to believe that there's something mentally wrong with someone who would kill an innocent 5-year-old child. So again, going back to the idea of causes of crime, root causes, you know, whether it's environmental impact, mental, something with his mental state, something's going on with this guy. And maybe he was just a bad, evil person. But you have to wonder if someone had gotten to him sooner or gotten to him at all and looked at his mental state, maybe there's something they could have done to help him deal with his issues so this isn't the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no way to get... neither you nor I can put ourselves in the mindset of someone who would shoot in, you know, a 5-year-old kid.
Murder a baby.
Yep. I mean, this is not a justification anyway, but most of the time when you hear these tragic stories, the child is not the target. In this case, it was. So yeah, I mean, usually a missed shot, a drive-by or whatever, which is, again, in no way diminishes the tragic nature of events like that. But this was a dude who literally walked up and shot a 5-year-old, assuming we're getting good information. I mean,
and as I've read multiple stories that I think the mom knew the guy who shot the kid and maybe even grew up with him. And so it's a tragic situation. And the idea that, you know, people are turning this into a political thing, like somehow this is like, so somehow this like should, I don't know, minimize the Black Lives Matter movement is just absurd, right? Like, I mean, this kid's life absolutely matters to his family and to everyone else. And it was snuffed out before it really had a chance to begin. And the only thing to come of it is that his murderer will be caught and it won't happen again. You know, he won't have the chance to do that again. You know, with a lot of these situations with abuse of power with our police, it's that they aren't held accountable and they get multiple opportunities to again, abuse the power that is given to them through, you know, the issuance of a badge and a gun and the ability to tame people and take their freedom. You know, and so when these officers do something and they abuse their power and nothing happens at all. Like, I mean, you're lucky if you get, you know, an investigation that, you know, puts them on leave. you know, when nothing happens at all, that's when you get anger. That's when you get people, you know, frustrated and agitated because they feel as if, like, look, this cop can literally get away with murder, and you know, we're at their mercy, whether we do something right or wrong or not. And that's where you get this frustration and you get this anger from people. And that's where groups like Black Lives Matter come from, right? Because the police are able to impart, you know, some really cruel and shitty behavior on people with just no accountability. And so that's the part that needs to change on the other on the other side. And that's the difference.
Yeah, I agree. I'm also trying to bemoan the lack of logic. The guy I'm talking about is a dentist. He got into dental school and passed it and is now working as a dentist. And yet the logic of why aren't they protesting this murder doesn't get through to him. And I'm like, I don't even know how. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's someone I care about. He's a very good friend. But the idea that there's a disconnect that allows him to say, well, we protested so much for George Floyd. This kid's an innocent 5-year-old boy. Where are the protests? And again, that's not the fucking point of a protest. And no one, absolutely no one, is saying that this kid's murderer shouldn't be brought to justice. If the police had said, we're not going to do anything about this because, you know, this kid's father was a bad guy or whatever, then there'd be protests and I would be supporting it. But that's not the case. So I don't understand why that concept is so hard to get through to some people. And it's not just my friend. I mean, Tucker Carlson did a bit about it. I shouldn't say a bit, a segment. I mean, if you're Tucker Carlson and you have the prime spot on Fox News and you don't understand the difference between protesting systemic injustice versus a random senseless act of violence.
You know damn well Tucker Carlson gets it. He's just doing it to incite. He's doing it intentionally. You know damn well he's doing it intentionally. I mean, I think the idea that he doesn't know the difference between the two is laughable. They do know, and they know how easy their audience is to manipulate.
All right.
And they do it with ease, right? I mean, that's where a lot of this shit comes from. So, you know, I mean, it is sad that the two things are kind of, you know, pitted against each other. Like, you know, we can't have two things happening at once. Two things can't be true at the same time. That the death of this kid is awful, that the person who killed him is behind bars, and that's a good thing, and that person will never walk free again. Like, all of those, like, it's a terrible situation, but it's to a degree been resolved, although for the family it will never be resolved. But at the same time, police abusing power with limited accountability is still something that we're dealing with, and we should all want change, and we should all feel that, listen, at some point, this abuse of power can get out of control. Eventually it will surpass just doing it to the people we don't give a shit about. What if it happens to me as a dentist or as an engineer or whatever in my neighborhood? Then what will the defense be if we don't stop it at the lower or the levels we don't necessarily feel or that we feel are below us, right? Like, I mean, that's the other side. Or that's the whole point of the Black Lives Matter movement, which I think you can separate from the group, right? The actual group where you go to the website and you donate money to, like, that group is something separate from the movement, right? I there's a lot of things about that group that I don't like, that I don't agree with, and I think that are extremely problematic, and especially how they go about some of the things that they've said. Openly, you know, flying the flag and the banner of Black Lives Matter, I think are extremely problematic. I've had issues with them from the beginning, and they begin to kind of, again, metastasize and grow and show their warts. And now they're aligning more and more with Antifa, and Antifa is aligning more and more with them. And I think organizationally, they're growing to be problematic. But the movement, the idea of Black Lives Matter, and what that message means, separating it from the group, I think is still extremely critical, and we have to be able to distinguish between the two situations and move forward and be able to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, but I want to touch back on a little bit what you said. We always hear the right complain about the media manipulation. What you just described, and I agree with, is Tucker Carlson, a prominent media figure, inciting unrest for the sake of ratings.
Yep.
All right. So we're not gonna, because that's when you do shit like saying, well, why are we protesting the death of Ken and Hanant? If you get it and you still try to play that card, and my friend
Jim Cannon does the same thing.
I didn't
bring it up in the same So CNN does the same thing. Fox, like, so if we're going to call out Fox and Tucker Carlson specifically for this particular thing, then you have to bring CNN to this. You have to bring MSNBC to do it, like, to remain objective. Like, they all have to be called on their bullshit for trying to manipulate people to see things a certain way. Like, they are all guilty of it. They're all doing it, I think, partly for ratings. And then I think that they now all have a vested stake in these narratives moving forward, so they have a vested stake into who is in power, right? Whether it's Congress, President, Senate, local, like all of it. So now they're all intertwined and they're all in bed together.
All right, well, then it's all a problem, and people like us need to call them out for it.
Right, and if we're going to do it, I just think we need to be consistent about it across the board. Right, like CNN can't get a pass because you happen to agree with the bullshit that they're calling out. Like, they're calling out Donald Trump a lot. Especially CNN has gotten to a point where they have an adversarial relationship with Donald Trump, and they have a specific narrative that everything that he does and everything that he touches is bad, and that is how they present it. Period. The end.
Like, you're right, and we've called CNN out for that. I mean, if you're going to look for, there's plenty of legitimate reasons to criticize Donald Trump. When you criticize him for the way he walks down a ramp, it's like, all right, that's really not relevant.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's like this, those sort of things, and going into. Oh, he, like you said, he tripped down the ramp. So now we have to wonder, you know, going into his mental state and his faculties and everything else. Like, that's just, it's all just a distraction. And, but the problem is that people, like, it literally catches fire quickly. You know, it happens on a Wednesday or a Thursday. And so it's got to be talked about on all the Sunday shows. It makes the rounds. It wastes 5 to 10 minutes on a show or an entire segment on a show talking about him walking down a ramp. Everybody's got to, you know, the whole round table has to make a comment about it. And that's time that they could actually be spending about talking about solutions to COVID or
the environment,
all these other things. And so again, it all just seems a distraction. And it also, like, again, you have to kind of wonder, they have to be in bed together, because the more we talk about nonsense, then that's less pressure we're putting on them to get to the root causes of these issues that are really disrupting our existence.
Agreed. All right. So have you watched anything from the DNC?
Honestly, I haven't. The only thing I've seen things on Twitter. I mean, part of it is like it's going on. I've somewhat checked out because I'm on vacation, but I mean, even flipping through the channels, I haven't seen anything on TV that has made me stop. You know, I mean, I haven't seen anything like, oh yeah, hey, the Democratic National Convention is going on. I haven't really seen anything. I know Michelle Obama gave a speech. I know that some prominent Republicans have come out in support of Joe Biden at this. I believe Colin Powell was one, and
John Kasich.
John Kasich was another, and maybe there may be some others that come out and do the same. That's all information that I've gotten from Twitter.
Yeah, I've got to say, I would normally, in a normal presidential election year, normally the convention would be in a place, and you know, in a centralized city, and it would be a live event that I would pay significant attention to. I've watched nothing. Now, part of it is because of it being largely remote. I've actually heard that Bill Clinton used to be, since his presidency, Bill Clinton was the rock star at most Democratic conventions. He now seems borderline toxic. Whether it's association with Jeffrey Epstein, which is even if all of his activities with Jeffrey Epstein were between consensual adults, just association with that guy ain't good. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest that Bill Clinton spent a fair bit of time with the guy. Plus the fact that people are looking back at some of the things he did in the 90s and saying maybe that crime bill wasn't the best thing ever. You know, at the time it was something he was hailed for because he was A, reaching across the aisle, and B, showing you could be liberal but still be tough. And now we're seeing the impacts of some of those laws, something that Joe Biden's going to have to answer for when it comes to debates. And I just think Bill Clinton has gone from rock star to being pretty toxic.
Yeah, and I think we had started to see that in 2016. There were a lot of questions on how much he was supposed to be involved with Hillary, and there were a lot of people in Hillary's camp who did not want him kind of spotlighted. One, because it was her show; two, because of the toxic nature around him. I think even more so now with the Jeffrey Epstein evidence coming to light, you really do not want to put him, he doesn't do anything for you at this point. You need to get, if you're really trying to win this election, you need to move, that kind of toxic progressive group that we were talking about earlier. You need them to vote, and you need them to vote in your favor, because they can be really bratty, and they've already decided, or that we've seen them in the past say that they'll just stay home. So if you want to pull them in, you can't have a figure like him, because he represents what they hate. So what you need is more, you need more AOC, you need more Rashida Tlaib, you need more, Ariana Pressley, you need people like that, really championing Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And you don't really need, we don't need to hear from Bill Clinton on this if you want to get those people in. Biden can do the job to get the people that are in the middle. But then you also have a Michelle Obama, who I think can also, help with some of those middle of the road folks. The Democrats have a tougher challenge ahead than I think that they are willing to admit, and then a lot of people who just don't like Donald Trump want to see. And it's because they're so divided, just in general. The progressive left, Democrats, however you want to describe them, they are so divided on what their issues are, what their message is. The only message that they're rallying behind right now is that they hate Donald Trump. And maybe that'll be enough to win. Maybe enough people can just rally behind that. But I mean, they're going to have some serious issues once they get in the office, because you have so many different groups that want their stake in the mountain, or their stake at the top of the mountain. It'll be interesting to see how they juggle it all. But, first things first, you got to get there. And Bill Clinton can't be a part of that mix to get you there, because I don't think there's anyone who needs to see Bill Clinton sign off to say that they're going to vote for Joe Biden.
Agreed. And what's interesting to me, because I have watched a little bit of Fox News, and they are working so hard to paint the Biden-Kamala Harris ticket as extremely left wing. And, you know, I also watched the Young Turks, and the Young Turks consider Joe Biden to be essentially a Republican. And Kamala Harris is getting a lot of attention, a lot of attacks. And you predicted this, and I knew you were right, but I didn't know how quickly they would go to certain cards. There's the "she slept her way to the top" card getting played. I think they're having a hard time juggling between she was a terrible prosecutor who put away innocent people, but she's a radical leftist who wants the situation in Portland to become the norm. They're trying to paint her with both of those brushes, and you really can't do that if you're being logical. But as we were discussing earlier in the show, people have lost logic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I mean, I think in regards to Kamala Harris, I think you're right. She's getting a lot of, the funny thing about Kamala Harris is that she's getting a lot of heat from both, the Trump administration, but also there are people even in the Democratic Party that are attacking her as well, because they feel that she was, too aggressive as a prosecutor. She didn't do enough to support people that were victims of excessive police force. She didn't do, she had an anti-truancy policy, which if you dig into what the policy was, her intentions behind it were good. I think that from a headline, Kamala Harris threatened to prosecute parents of chronically truant children. There's a lot to that needs to be unpacked. There was more to that policy than just if your kid doesn't go to school, the parent goes to jail. The policy was, look, we're going to try to provide you with as many resources as you can to help you get your kid to school, whether it's food, rides, whether it's social service, whatever. And if we offer you all these things and your kid still isn't going to school, and you're not doing anything to help your kid get to school to get an education, then yes, we're going to hold you as a parent accountable for your child's behavior in these situations. And the root cause behind that was that truant kids were there was a greater likelihood that those kids would end up victims of violent crime, whether it's, girls being raped or the young men being shot and killed. And so they were safer in school than they were out of school. And so she came up with a aggressive and extreme measure to a degree to help try to reduce that number. And it worked to a degree, although you can't look at it and say that specifically helped reduce those numbers. But that was the story behind it. But it gets spun as she just threatened to put kids in, parents in jail if their kids were, didn't go to school. And so those are the sort of things she's getting it from both sides. But I think, I do believe that ultimately she's going to win, eventually that she'll win people over. But you're right. I mean, she's facing a lot of battles, but I mean, no matter who you put in that spot, the Trump team had plenty of time. I mean, the way Joe dragged this out, I mean, they had forever to build a profile on anyone that he was going to pick. They've had months to put this, you knew it was going to be down to probably five people, and they've had months to put together, opposition research to take these people down. And so it just came down to who Joe was going to pick. He picked her, so they pulled her file, and they just started loading up the gun and firing off.
Well, and we talked about this a couple shows ago, and you were in favor of Kamala Harris being the choice. I was leaning towards Susan Rice, but the more I thought about it, this is mostly retrospective, she's the right pick. He had to pick a woman of color. He had to pick someone who was a name, and she's proven that she's an intelligent person. She's had some... I mean, she was the attorney general for the state of California. She's a senator from the state of California. I do think she'll win people over. I'm seeing a lot of people say they can't wait to see her debate Mike Pence, and I get that. but I also want to temper people's expectations, because this kind of reminds me of when Joe Biden debated Sarah Palin, and everyone kind of went into the debate saying, if she comes out of this looking anything less than idiotic, she wins. And I think with Mike Pence, people are already saying, you know, all right, intellectually, he's not in her league. And with her experience as a lawyer, you would expect her to tear him apart in a debate, which she may well do. But I think people just say, well, she's a lawyer. What do you expect?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know a lot about Mike Pence, so I'm not sure what his background is. So I'm not so willing to jump into that camp of, you know, it's an intellectual mismatch. And just because someone is a lawyer doesn't necessarily mean that they have some sort of academic, you know, that they're just head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of intelligence, right?
Like I agree with that.
I mean, that's a major assumption. You know, I mean, Michael Cohen was a fucking lawyer for Trump. I mean, and we all agree that guy's a fucking moron. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't necessarily think that Pence versus Harris in a debate is a mismatch. I mean, look, Mike Pence is an extremely reserved guy. He's going to bide his time. He's not going to say something overly stupid. He's going to choose his words very carefully. I don't think Mike Pence is going to overspeak. He's going to be well prepared for whatever that they go into. So the idea that it's just going to be her, you know, walking all over him from an intellectual standpoint, I don't think it's fair, accurate, or the smart way to go about it. And the one thing with Kamala Harris, that if I am on her team, I am impressing upon her that, look, if you start to feel that you've got momentum, you need to know when to put the brakes on, because what she can do is start feeling herself a little bit, get out over her skis, say something stupid that she can't then retract, right? And then while it may not be, like, Pence may not catch it, like, right, like she caught Joe Biden in one of those in the debates months ago, and it was a great moment, and everybody clapped, and it was a highlight of the debate, and there was a whole thing, and then people started to take it apart and break it down and really kind of be able to go after her. And then when it was thrown back in her face in another debate, there wasn't anything she could do with it because she had kind of gone too far with it in the previous debate. So that measured sense that Pence has, Harris needs to make sure that she implements going into a debate with him to make sure that she doesn't get herself in a position where she's trying to backtrack later.
I agree. Again, I'm mostly setting the groundwork for everyone who's expecting this to be a bloodbath where she gets carried out on the shoulders of the crowd and Mike Pence is there sulking at the podium. If you are looking for that, you're going to be disappointed. And then we've also got all the debate going on, and maybe part of the reason why I have not seen as much of the DNC or any of the DNC is all the other things going on. And the stuff going on with the post office is just plain weird. I frankly don't know how to interpret some of it. I hear people saying that they're taking away machines that sort mail and basically throttling back the ability of the post office to do its job, and that the postmaster general has donated, I think, $1.1 million to Trump over the years. So you could question his lack of objectivity. But the things going on with the post office are actually really making me concerned, because I mailed in my application for a mail-in ballot about 4 or 5 days ago. And I'm concerned that if what people are saying is true, that I might not get my ballot in time. But if I go to the polling place, now that I've submitted an application for a mail-in ballot, I think that's illegal. So I don't know. It's a weird spot to be in. I submitted my request for a mail-in ballot because I think it was a smart thing to do, but now I'm really getting concerned.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I plan on going in to vote at the polling place. I mean, which I don't know if that's a controversial thing to do or not, but I mean, if people feel safer voting by mail because of COVID, do whatever you got to do. I want to make sure that everything, you know, my vote gets counted, all that other stuff. Not that I don't trust the post office, but I also would just rather go in and do it the traditional way, I'm not going to vote by mail just to spite Donald Trump. And I feel that some people are doing it. There's really no reason for you to vote by mail. I mean, if you just want to, that's fine. But I mean, it's not like your polling place is going to be overrun with people. You're going to have to wait for hours. It's not that far from you. You'll be able to walk in. It'll take all of maybe 15 minutes, cast your vote. Everything you need to look up, you can look up before you go. So I get for people who absolutely need to vote by mail. And look, you can do whatever you want. It actually doesn't fucking matter. Whatever you want to do, I don't care. I don't necessarily see the point in it unless you absolutely need to, or you're one of those people that are at a high risk of infection. I mean, I just think, and in Ohio, we can vote early. You know, that's the other thing. You can go to the polling place and vote early, starting sometime, I believe, in October. So there's a lot of ways that this can be done. I'm not really that worried about it from a personal standpoint, but on a national level, you know, there are people who need to do it. So, you know, I do have concerns about their ability to do so.
Well, I did it because the application was put in my, an application to vote was actually put in my front door in a, stop the spread of COVID flyer along with the application. I do want to say that it's an application, not general vote by mail. So the whole, this is going to cause massive voter fraud thing, I think is silly. But if I don't get my ballot, I need to reach out to the Board of Elections and say, what do I do? You mentioned earlier that some people are saying they're going to stay home because the whole system is corrupt, blah, blah, blah. I understand why people, I also think saying that is, if you're not going to vote because Bernie didn't get a fair shake, or Joe Biden creepily smells people's hair, just own why you're doing it. Own that you're trying or intentionally not being part of the system, and don't give me this moral high ground bullshit. If you really feel that way about the presidency, fine. Don't vote for that. Vote for the other issues on that ballot because they matter. And that's a big part of why I want to vote by mail, is because you're right. I could research all the ballot initiatives and candidates with the cheat sheet. I could do that. And frankly, I should. Fine. You got me. But I don't typically look at, the person running for the, judgeship and district, whatever. And if I have the ballot in front of an hour to go through things, I can do a better job at that. So that's why I chose to request the mail-in vote.
Sorry, I just had some noise come in. Yeah.
Understood. All right. So real quick, college football is getting weird. The Big Ten and Pac-12 have said they're not going to play in the fall, but might try to play in the spring. Justin Fields, a quarterback for Ohio State, has been championing a petition to get Ohio State to play football in the fall. Ohio the other day, and the Lakewood high school team was on the field practicing in full gear. So, and I don't even know what's going on with the Big 12 and SEC and ACC, but as far as I know, they're still intending to play their seasons. So it's just strange. I don't know if you got any thoughts or insights, but I just think the whole situation is so bizarre. And
I think it's interesting because I think it's the lack of the lack of continuity and seeing how little authority and power the NCAA has in this situation, right? Like, I mean, so you literally have some conferences saying that they're going to play, other conferences saying that they're not going to play. Conferences talk to, teams from some conferences saying they're going to go play in other conferences, and, just the complete lack of continuity and consistency throughout the NCAA just shows you how little power they have, right? And when the schools and conferences want to, they can tell the NCAA to screw off, right? Because right now, if they don't, they can lose a lot of money. But when it comes to how the kids are treated and when it comes to, doing what's equitable or what makes sense in terms of fairness for the kids, whether it's, these ridiculous suspensions and these rules regarding their ability to transfer, I have my own feelings about the whole pay to play, but just all of that in general, the NCAA has all that power then, but right now, all of a sudden, like the NCAA is not saying anything. And when you think about who actually makes the league up, the NCAA up, and how it operates, and it's, the athletic directors and, presidents from the various schools and all that. And all of a sudden it's just like, all right, so when you guys really want to get something done for money, you can, but as it relates to the students, like, you can't actually do a damn thing that makes any sense in these kids' favor. And I just think it just, it really kind of highlights the hypocrisy and the ridiculousness of the entire system.
I agree with that. I mean, I've been very critical of the NCAA for a very long time. And this is not showing them in a good light by any means. The other thing that I wanted to touch real quick is, we've said this on the show, I've said this clearly, that the worst thing you can do is a half-ass solution to a problem like this. The University of North Carolina resumed classes in person. They seemed to be wanting to pioneer the fact that, in-person college could resume. And other schools, I think Notre Dame and Michigan State were in the same boat. And they've already suspended in-person classwork. So they started to go back in, a bunch of cases spiked, they pulled right back out. And the half-ass approach just is guaranteed failure. And that's what happened with North Carolina, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And I don't know what the answer is, but the put your right foot in, take your right foot out, hokey pokey strategy just is flawed.
Yeah, fully agreed. The problem is separating the schools from the NCAA, and then having them. The way things are so combined and intertwined. Like, I don't know what the right answer is. I have my issues with the NCAA, but ultimately, I really should be looking at the schools themselves individually, because they have as much control over the situation as the NCAA. They just choose not to use it. So it's a hard, I'm not sure what the solution is towards fixing it all, when it just comes to the general systematic issues with the NCAA. But in terms of, how they approach this season, I'm a diehard football fan. I will always support it. I always push back on people who say that the athletes are spoiled babies and overpaid if they're professionals, or they're overcompensated because the college kids get scholarships. I always push back against those people because I think those arguments are rooted in something else other than what they're saying. But in this particular instance, I think the prudent move, if you really care about the students, like you say you do, the student athletes and the professional athletes, then you just say, look, we're going to shut the season down, right? Like, you can't have this kind of in and out, you know, like you said, one foot in, one foot out. You know, because if it's not safe for the kids in the Big Ten, why is it safe for the kids in the ACC? Or if it's safe for the kids in the SEC, why is it not safe for the kids in the Big Ten? So either they can all play or none of them can play. It doesn't make any sense what they're doing. But it just, like, it's college football is a microcosm of what's going on across the country. You know, I mean, we're all in or we're all out, and we're doing the one thing that you said a long time ago that we shouldn't do, and that's half-ass it, right? And like, I'm in either way. If we want to go all in, then let's go all in, lock the whole thing down, shut it down for, you know, the time needed to eradicate this COVID thing, and then let's move on with our lives, right? And if we don't have the balls to do it, then just say we don't have the balls to do it. Fuck it. Sorry. Some of you are going to have to go. We're rooting for science, to somebody to come up with an antidote or a vaccine and a treatment. And, you know, until then, we're going to have to deal with it and live with it. Right. We need to do one or the other. And you've got a group of people saying we can't be all out because of the week, which, okay, but if you can't get people all in, we can't continue to do this half-ass thing, right? We just can't. And so college football clearly hasn't figured it out. Professional sports hasn't figured it out. I mean, you know, politically, we haven't figured it out. Businesses haven't figured it out. We're just doing a really bad job of dealing with this thing, contrary to Donald Trump saying we've tested the most people. Congratulations. But, you know, it's still a clusterfuck.
Right.
I don't know.
And the whole, it's kind of brings us full circle. We I think anyone who's being even remotely logical can say wearing a mask when you're walking around a supermarket or going to a restaurant as you're going to your seat doesn't hurt anything. If you don't think it helps, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm going to trust the doctors and who say it does. But the fact that you could do something that simple, that innocuous, and have people act so viscerally, angrily about being told you have to put a piece of cloth over your face while you're walking to sit down in a restaurant is indicative of the mentality that we've been talking about most of this episode, where it's like, you know, there's outrage and there's anger and there's complete abandonment of logic. And, you know, as a country, I really wish we could do better.
Yeah, I mean, it's highly frustrating. But unfortunately, I mean, this is the hand we're dealt. So, you know, you and I are along for the ride.
On that cheery note, I think maybe we should let you get back to vacationing. And we'll get this episode published. And I'll look forward to seeing you when you get back to town.
All right, brother.
Sounds good. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. You can email me, jim@whiskeycongress.com. You can email steve@whiskeycongress.com. Thanks for listening. We're done. Go ahead.